Wednesday, February 6, 2008, will come to order. We have an information meeting today, and I will say that we had a pre-meeting, and I was very fascinated to hear what the solar world has plans for Oregon. And I think without further ado, we'll ask Jack to introduce his panel and make the presentation.
And we have a screen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thought you were with me.
And does Chair Barnhart, as they get the screen in place there, for the record, Jack Esselman, Tonkin Thorpe Government Relations and Public Policy Group. I'm pleased to introduce to you today a panel comprised of executives from SolarWorld USA who are here to speak to you about their investments in Hillsboro, Oregon, as well as the photovoltaic industry worldwide. Seated immediately to my right is Boris Klebensberger. Boris is the president of SolarWorld USA. He joins us today from Freiburg, Germany, by way of Camarillo, California. And Boris soon will be relocating here to the Hillsboro area. In addition to his service at SolarWorld, Boris is also a vice president of the European Photovoltaic Industry Association and can provide you, we believe, a unique perspective on the industry from a global perspective. Seated to Boris's immediate right is Mr. Bob Beisner. He's a vice president with SolarWorld USA and brings several decades of experience in the photovoltaic industry. And with that, I'll turn the presentation over to Mr. Klebensberger, and we'll take your questions when that's completed.
Mr. Klebensberger, thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you very much for the kind introduction, Chairman Bernhard, your committee. It's a pleasure for me to be here and present you some of our insights and the plans and visions that we have with SolarWorld in Oregon and specifically in Hillsboro. If I might just spend a few words on what SolarWorld does, you see this as a cycle, and this reflects the whole value chain that SolarWorld is providing to the customers and all the areas that SolarWorld is active in. So we start with the silicon production, a raw silicon, semiconductor grade or solar grade as we call it. We transfer it into wafers, so we have wafer production facilities where we produce single and multicrystalline wafers. It's not the same type of wafers as you use from the semiconductor area. It's by far thinner. Today's wafer thickness is 200 microns towards 150 microns. That's less than the thickness of a hair. And semiconductor still uses like 600 to 800 millimeters. So we call that brick, and we call ours wafer. And from productivity standpoint, the production of a semiconductor producer, what they produce on pieces per month is what we do like in a few hours. So it's a complete different production scale. It's not like these tiny little very expensive ones. It's just volume. It has to be cheap, it has to be high quality, it has to be repeatable, and it's volume. It's a real volume business. These wafers get converted into solar cells. This is now the active device. This is the miracle, can convert sunlight directly into electricity. And the actual efficiency that we provide with our actual production in Freiburg is about 17.4%. The sun that comes in, 17.4% of the power, all the accumulated power of the sunlight gets into electricity. The comparison is a tree or the nature is able to convert sunlight into wood or something too. The efficiency factor there is below 1%. If you then harvest all the wood and burn it into a normal factory, in a normal power plant, you know the Carnot effect, the Carnot process, that limits you to 30% of the energy you put in to get into electricity. That means the upper limit of biomass is 0.3%. We are at 17.4, and for Hillsboro, Oregon, we are shooting for even higher numbers, around the 20s. That means the photovoltaic industry, the photovoltaic process is more than 80 times more efficient than you can do with this biomass. And of course, the duration of the products is by far longer. We provide a 25 years guarantee on these modules. Modules is just then the final product, the array beyond glass frames to be suitable for the use and the mounting on roofs, on free installations, and wherever you need it. Solarworld provides not only just the finished good as modules, we provide so-called kits. We provide finished solutions. If you have a roof, we design it. We make all the engineering that it fits to your needs, to your roof, and it will be first and primary quality. We do mounting structures, screw, fixtures, cable, the design, cable lengths, inverter, displays. Whatever you need, you get it out of one hand, delivered to your place, installed by your electrician or installer nearby that you trust, that we trust in, because we have trained or we have discussed and made sure that he provides the best service needed for you to have a system that's more than 25 years providing all the energy that you're expecting out of it. And not only this, we have also established, and we are the only one worldwide doing recycling. We can recycle all the material. You see here, that tiny little picture is a former solar cell. You see still that two stripes. These are the so-called bus bars where you collect the electricity. This was a solar cell that ran already for 25 years. We recycled it without melting it again and using the wafer directly as a feed-in material into a new production. So this means we cover really the full value chain from the beginning all through the value chain down to the sales, and can even and provide take-back systems for modules worldwide. This is just as a few points, the motivation that have brought us to Hillsboro and to Oregon. Of course, it's a semiconductor area that helps us with employees, suppliers, material, and administration, because they know what we are doing and we know that they know too. So we speak the same language, we can speed up, we can do focus on our business and on the right decisions. Of course, it was a very perfect building because it was built crystallization, wire sawing, and then clean room. That's exactly what we need too, and I will show on a few later slides why that helped us in speeding up. It saved us time. We didn't have to build that building again. We could use it directly. Of course, and this is why we are sitting here too, certain funds provided to us helped us too in making our decision very quick, and as I had pointed out, probably we are a little bit ahead of all the rest because we are already doing our business in expanding the facilities. This is an overview of what we recently purchased, and these are two purchases. We, in the first round, the existing building, former Komatsu building, with some expansion areas, and we recently purchased this additional land too. So it's all over 100 acres of production or floor that could be developed. And now I'm going into what are our current plans for Hillsboro, and you might find in the maps that we have sent around some of the documentation. We are a public traded company, so we have made some public announcement, and you will find the 500 megawatt in these announcements. So it's out in the market, and we stick to it, and this is what we're going to have to, or what our actual planning part is. The 2008, the first phase, that's what we do already. This phase one is now what we are undergoing to install. It's the 60 megawatt in crystallization in furnaces, 100 megawatt in vaporing, and 100 megawatt in cell processing, of which additional 20 megawatts are the new concept that we will prove and then further on invest, and a 100 megawatt module production plus the warehouse for the delivery. So you see, all the full value chain will be established in Hillsboro to more or less copy exactly what we do in Freiburg 2. The next phase, phase 2, and this is what basically is already decided upon the SolarWorld board, and the investment money for it and the timelines are all agreed upon, is the 250 megawatt. That's what fitting into the building, plus some additional buildings that I will show you later on. On the long run, we see the phase three, which would mean we would have to double the production site into a new building and then double more or less all the capacities from crystal growing, wafering, cell line, and module making up to 300 megawatts. And this shows a little bit of what we are talking. This is phase one. This is the actual building. And you see these are the crystal growers. It's already 70. The building from Komatsu was built for 34 growers. You see, the photovoltaic industry has a complete different approach. We need low cost, high productivity, high quality. That's why we get four times the growers, same type of growers more or less in the same building, because we use the space and everything by far more efficient. We want to have most of the product out of it. You see here then where the crystals get shaped, wire sawed, and then the rest of it is the cell line. So you see the cell line is taking most of the space of all the processes, because there you have now all the surface. You have cut these blocks into small pieces, that's why you get a lot of space. No modeling in here. The modeling has to be somewhere else. The warehouse, administration, everything has to go into different buildings. This is phase two. And if you please have a close look on the density of the equipment in here. This is 170 growers in the existing building. You see the blue one. We need some expansion to the building to get the 250 megawatt on crystallization into the building. I don't know. Wacker probably had 60 growers, I don't know, at their best, maybe. This is only in this building will be then over 200 growers, and this is only the 250 megawatt installation. These are the wire saws and the singulation equipment, and now you see all the dense equipment for the cell processing. This is something many users might have seen already, and it's only preliminary. We are still working with the City of Hillsborough for our master site, but I would like to present you a little bit of an intermediate step that you see what are they talking about, what are they shooting for. And you see the existing building with today's infrastructure. We would have to add additional facility sites and the expansion for the crystal growers to get more of these crystal growers into the building. This is like the 250 megawatt up to cell. But already the 100 megawatt cell in the warehouse are these existing buildings that we would need, and that we have agreed with the City of Hillsborough to go along and build them now to be finished by end of the year. The next phase would be, if we expand the modular production, there will be two additional production sites for the module to make up for the 300 megawatt. And you see here some areas, and that might be lower than shown here, for the recycling production too. So we are also going to invest in recycling in Hillsborough to treat waste streams from our production, and of course offering the service to other industries located in Hillsborough or in Oregon too, because I guess we can have also a huge benefit for them too. Phase three needs then a lot of additional buildings, and you see already substations, because the power supply wouldn't be enough anymore. New crystallization halls, new wafering and cell production, and this would now be a production that the layout for like the 500 megawatt production planned in Hillsborough. And as we are always looking for growth, and as I'm very convinced that we will be very successful, we have even looked further on, and this is on a preliminary scale. We believe we can get up to 750 megawatt on an integrated production floor on the existing site in Hillsborough, and we are happy to work with Hillsborough on the master plan to get also all these buildings within the regulations on the premises. To explain what that means now financially for us, and what that where now the interlink between why we are sitting here and talk about the project is, I have drawn up this scheme. You see, the existing purchase of land and the fab plus the expansion, that's what we already undergoing. The phase two is just filling the existing building to 250 megawatt, and you have to add now the numbers to come to the that's also incremental increase on investment. So this already accounts for more than half a billion on investment, direct investment into equipment, facilities, and production. And if you would go to the 500 megawatt that we have announced, you see that from our today's approach, it's more than 1 billion direct investments only in Hillsborough. And I guess this is a fair amount of money that we would like to spend in the production side, in renewable, in photovoltaic energy in Hillsborough. You see also the corresponding direct employees. This is only direct employees that I would calculate. And these numbers are even on the very conservative side. In Freiburg, the amount of employees per produced megawatt are even higher. So we expect Hillsborough to be our newest and modernest and therefore most competitive site. We have spent a lot of efforts in 3 years of research for developing this new process that will be first time worldwide established in this factory, and therefore get the labor intensity lower. We all know it's not the cheapest labor force here in the United States, but we still believe, not like Cyprus that called us idiots to invest in a Tucholsky process in the United States, and therefore they are producing in the Philippines. I responded, and you might find that in the news too. We still believe it is possible, because if we can get the right set of equipment, technologies, and the right people that are dedicated and will work hard and provide the right technology in the right area and surroundings, and of course that includes for us certain financial conditions, I strongly believe we will be able to compete on the market. We have demonstrated it in Germany, and Germany is not known to be the cheapest place on earth, definitely not for labor. When we started in 2000 with 80 people in Freiburg, we are running today as 1,400 direct employees in Germany, and these are all PhDs, white collar, highly technicians. It's no low cost labor available at us. We pay benefits, we subsidize child care, we subsidize children's sport groups, we do everything we can. We are the biggest taxpayer in the area of Freiburg because of the revenues and the income that we provided as SolarWorld AG, not taking into account the taxes that our employees have to pay from their income tax. The direct taxes that we pay in Freiburg, I guess, counts for at least 40 or 45% of the business revenues of the county of Freiburg. We are one of the largest employees between Grest and Freiburg, and that's an area of more than 100 kilometers around our premises. And just to show, this is what we want to do here, and we are completely convinced that we can do it, because it's the perfect location. It's similar to Freiburg. We have also semiconductor area. We have Wacker Siltronic as our direct neighbor, which the biggest semiconductor wafer plant of Wacker worldwide now, as they have installed their 300 millimeter fab directly in Freiburg in competition to Portland. We have gallium arsenide, fiber compound materials. So there's a lot of crystal growing expertise in Freiburg, as it is in Oregon. There is AMD, Quimonda, and Infineon in Dresden as semiconductor producers, as Intel in Hillsborough. So we have same conditions, the same workforce, the same dedicated people. So I see no reason why we shouldn't be very successful in getting renewable energies, the biggest and best plant in the United States built here in Hillsborough. And that SolarWorld is not just one of these dot-com companies and making big announcement and then blow off in another 3 months. I also implemented this small chart that shows, on the one hand side, you see the cash and the current assets that are, on the other hand, on our liabilities. And you see that already the cash situation within SolarWorld counts for all our liabilities. So SolarWorld is a very profound, sound, well-financed company. That's why we can act so quick. But still, as you see, these are very rapid growing markets on the photovoltaic industry. Over the last 15 years, 30 to 35% growth every year. Every year. Not over the 15 years, every year. The markets are doubling in every 2 and 2.5 years. The technology is going very, very quick. Efficiencies have increased a lot. The production costs have been decreased by 7% every year. We are on a market that is just starting. Also showing on the sales side that SolarWorld growth at least on the rate of the market you see here, and these are numbers of 2006, and I'm not yet able to provide you with the number of 07 because they are not yet published, but I can tell you we did very, very well.
Huh?
How is the market going? You see here, and these are from 2005 to 2007, these are more or less actual numbers, and you see how the market already picked up in the past and what the predictions are. And this is still a very conservative prediction that we have in our within SolarWorld. If you go to like banks like Sarrazin out of Switzerland, UBS, or Deutsche Bank, or Lazar, they have announcements already in 2010 here from 10 to 15 megawatt worldwide markets. So we will see. I would still have my doubts with these very high numbers, but even 7.6 or 8 is three times the numbers last year. So there is a market, there is the product, we know how to make it. We are number three in the world now. We are number one in the United States, and I don't give up, and I'm not willing to. And I'm not definitely, and that's what I tell my people too, I'm the last that wants to lose against the Chinese, because if we lose all our jobs and all production to the Chinese, I don't know what we're going to do in the future here, because it's not like picking grapes somewhere and living in the sunset. That's not working. So I'm ready, huh? And I take that battle, and I'm quite convinced, even, and at least it's up to me, and I really need it to prove Cyprus to be wrong, to go to the Philippines and have invested all their money in production in the Philippines and show it's definitely possible in the United States to build up such a business and make it very profitable and very successful. What are we shooting for? On the long run, we of course know that the power generated out of PVs today not price competitive in all areas. Even that's not true for California, because we provide most of the power around noon. Around noon, energy is the most expensive in California, and as we know that there are all these blackouts, most needed. So we can provide these solutions. Already today in California, with today's cost structure, photovoltaic power is cheaper or cost competitive to what you have to pay on your plug. So if you can get that to the customer, to the people in California, this is already a huge market. But we are shooting even further. We believe we can get the so-called grid parity, where we meet the price for electricity out of the grid in the next 5 to 10 years, depending on the area where the sunshine. And this is a dedication that we, not only we, but the whole industry has. And we have the roadmap to get there. We know what we have to implement in technologies to be there. And the Hillsboro installation and the technology there is our major and integral part of having that path towards grid parity. We will get it with the products out of Hillsboro. I know it. And I would like you to believe in me and into my engineers that we will make that happen. And now, where are we coming from? And this is Freiburg, very old town, nearby 1,000 years old, and it was once, by the way, the richest town in the world, because Freiburg has a silver history, silver mining. 80% of all silver worldwide that had been found is coming out of Freiburg. It was the richest silver foundings ever. The first foundings in silver was in the 11th century, and Freiburg means free mountain. And in the 12th or 13th century, because the Duke of Saxony wanted to have miners to dig for the silver, he got his percentages. He was the richest man for decades, for centuries in Europe, because all of the silver. Now, the model in Freiburg is from silver to silicon, because today all the businesses run with Siltronic, Deutsche Solar. When we started in 2000, this was our existing building. You have not this annex and not this one. That's built later. That's where we started. Today, this is SolarWorld here. These are our production size in fiber, part one. This is zirconic over here, and this is gallium arsenide 3.5, and you see all very close. This is when we started with 80. This is our expansion so far. This is the second industry area that we have occupied in Freiberg. You see our warehouse, the silicon recycling facilities, the module fab. So all this and this office building is part three. And this more or less accounts to what we have in mind for Husbro, size-wise. For expansion areas, we have acquired this one, and we are going currently also to establish further installations on this free field. And our latest acquisition is that very brand new industry area around Freiberg. This is 70 acre of industry area that we are. This is an older picture. Today you would obviously, we have started the ground laying and the installation of roads and facilities on that building. This is the other expansion area. And we will expand no matter what, in Freiburg or in Hillsboro, because I'm not giving up my market position, because we have to be there in time. We can't spend time in losing track. And just Freiburg, and you might know that in Germany, that's all governed by the European Commission, there's investment funding for companies investing into employment. And it's regulated with employment. And we got over the last 5 years, and we still get around 35% on direct investment funded by the European Commission, out of which 60% is non-taxable income, and the other one gets into a taxable income. And the rate they're looking for it is how much employment will you provide. And as we have run through the regulations with them, we outperformed the factors of employment by, I don't know, factor two or what. As we have more direct employment and secondary employment than the regulations for European Commission needed. And therefore, we have been rewarded by the state of Saxony and of Germany of being one of the most prestigious and best working investment, direct investments that have been funded by the European Commission in whole Germany. And therefore won a lot of prizes and has been highly rewarded for our reports and the work that we have done. The work with regards to creating jobs, creating a good environment, and keeping track and keeping the promises that we have made. And that's the statement I will give you. We are willing. We just need to get it done. And if you can help us in getting decisions being made quick and to our favors, I will deliver what I have promised. We will invest and we will make the story in Hillsboro a success. And if we get renewable energies, and I'm completely convinced that the United States is a perfect market for photovoltaic, it's just a product made for American citizens, we will also get the market here prepared for renewable energies, and therefore we'll have our home market, our home play here, and from there on providing modules out of Oregon in all over the world as we do it currently out of fiber. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope I could give you a certain insight and impression of what we are going to undertake and what our ideas are. And if you have any questions, I would be delighted to answer.
Thank you very much. That's an exciting presentation. I'm assuming that there are some questions and thoughts. Representative Byrne.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it Mr. Klebensberg?
Yes, absolutely.
Is it perfect. Close enough? a couple quick questions about transportation, but then I have a comment I want to make. First of all, what are the transportation needs of this new fab plant in Hillsboro? Is everything going to be done in and out with truck, or using rail, or using the airports in Hillsboro or Portland? What's the need coming in and going out?
On the scale that we provide, there's a lot of transportation. Yes, for a 200 or for a 300 megawatt module production, you have to keep in mind to get the product, the volume that you need on glass and aluminium, you're gonna have like 10 to 15 trucks with incoming goods every day to just provide the production ongoing, and that's only the module side. yes, there will be a lot of truck. Most of them is still delivered by truck because it's just in time.
Mm-hmm.
We got certain products by air freight, especially critical parts like silicones and special pieces, but then a lot of volume products. We provide, for example, we get a big chunk out of our silicon, out of Hamburg Semiconductors here in the United States. They deliver it typically also by truck. So what we see is a lot of truck load to the factory. That's why the warehouse is also very big, and on these slides it's still too low. We will have a lot of investigation to be done also with the city of Hillsborough to provide the right access and get these traffic organized so that they don't get stuck. As you might see already here, this is the warehouse. This is a 10,000 square meters. Now I do it. This is a 10,000 square meters by. It's 1 million square feet.
100,000.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see already here a lot of this. Here is only docks, loading docks. It's about at 15 loading docks to get, and they are all occupied. And that's because we get all the incoming goods, and that's not the only warehouse that we have. There's a lot of more warehouses on the production that will be reduced in Hillsborough because it's more an integrated approach that we took here. But yes, a lot of transport. Railways, I haven't looked into railways yet.
If you would identify yourself for the record and make your comment, please.
Sure, I'm Bob Beisner. And what the city of Hillsborough has approached us about is some of our rail transportation's needs. So we've been working with their economic development group there to also start investigating the rail needs as well.
Okay. And the fab plan itself, I realize that the U.S. market, the potential in the U.S. market is huge. Is the intent with the capacity of this fab plant to merely supply it's a huge endeavor, but to supply the U.S. market exclusively, or are you looking to also export photovoltaic products out of the United States from this plant, or does that remain to be seen at this point?
We do both. Today, we provide today's American market out of our actual factories, but we also provide the whole products to Asia and a lot of to rural electrification in countries. That means we export product too. I mean, as in Europe too, we are globally acting. We have sales agencies in South Africa, in Singapore, for Asia, in Spain, in Germany, and in California.
But this will be supplied out of this new factory.
There's basically two production sites, either Freiburg or Hillsborough.
Okay.
And so all products will be delivered worldwide from these factories and as close as possible. That's mean for us Asia, of course, because the ports are near, and then we can ship out of the West Coast ports directly to Asia. That's the best situation for us, and that's why, again, Oregon and the location around Portland is very suitable for us because, of course, there's a lot of shipments going on boats, and that's perfect for us.
That's good. But just one quick comment, and we'll finish up. I just want to, I'm sure I speak for everybody, I'm certainly speaking for myself, welcome and thank you for this. This is absolutely a wonderful project, and you know, we were talking up here earlier, this is, as representatives of the people of Oregon, this is what I think we're supposed to be doing. This is what we're here to do, which is to help provide good quality jobs for Oregonians in the industries of tomorrow, not the industries of yesterday, while at the same time doing something correct for the world environmentally. So I say thank you for the faith and the trust that you have in not only Oregon, but the United States, and on behalf of all of us, I'm sure, welcome with big open arms. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your presentation. I'm sorry I missed the first part of it, but I wanted to ask you a little bit about the jobs, again, that are created, and I know one of the things in the presentation talks about the skilled workforce that we have here in Oregon. So the jobs, are they, do you anticipate these jobs will go to people that are already here in Oregon, and are they permanent jobs?
Yes. In the quality of jobs that we need, as to the high automation and the complexity of the processes, it's not, you can't make the best product with the highest efficiency, you know, by, I don't know, waving hands and saying that will work all by itself. It's complex, and therefore we really need trained people, and we are we know, because we did the survey before we went to Oregon, there is workforce available. In semiconductor, the employment rates had been went down over the last years, and we still know that Intel and Applied and other people are trying to lay off people. So we know there are people that has all the experience and that would like to create something new that we can, that we need for our production. So normally, and what we do in fiber too, it's fixed job. It's not like temporary jobs. It's fixed job because they have to be trained and they have to do their job the best they can. Otherwise, I can't use them. So I'm not interested in having people that swap in there for 3 weeks and then go away, because that's waste of money for me. That will not work for us. I need dedicated people that would like to grow within the company. Within SolarWorld, I have people that, since ever we started, we have had very few people leaving the company. So they are all more or less still within the company, because they are all living the same dream and working towards the same goals. And also within fiber, in this area, and there's a lot of unemployment, like 20% unemployment rate in Eastern Germany, as you might know. So they have been very grateful having jobs in SolarWorld, and we paid for this area by far over the average in the area. And that's why our jobs have been very attractive and people wanted to work at SolarWorld. Whether I can compete with salaries with Intel, I don't know. But I know that my job will be the better jobs, because in SolarWorld, they can move something. They can make decisions. I'm not like a 15 level organization. We are small because we want to be at quick and get things done. So I provide a good salary, a good structure, and people that can be, you know, be part of it and not just go there and get the paycheck. That's not what I'm looking for. And that's what I believe I can found in Oregon. That's also, if I make that comment, one of the differences between California and Oregon.
Mr. Chair, follow up?
Please.
And I know you mentioned a lot of the working conditions in Germany. I'm not that familiar, but I know that a lot of things are provided in Germany through the government that here in the United States are provided often in the private sector by the business that's employing people. So would you anticipate providing health care and other kinds of benefits to the people that you're hiring?
Yes, but I may maybe Bob is the right to, because
sure,
he's also running HR.
From the benefits standpoint, yes, we'll have healthcare benefits. We'll compete at a certain level with our semiconductor brothers and sisters that are out there. So we feel that we'll be able to work very well in this area. We have about 12 years of experience over in Vancouver, Washington, so we're very familiar with this arena, with the labor markets for the area. We've been here through the ups and the downs of the semiconductor industry, so we know how to come in here, we know how to compete, and we know how to provide good jobs.
If I make an additional comment, I'm German. And as you said, in Germany, everything with job markets is highly regulated. You don't have much choices. Pension, healthcare, everything, there is a governmental role and you have to follow it. And I'm very used to have employees that this is a family. If you're going into a company, you're not going there to take the paycheck. You're part of the family who belong to it. We care for the employee cares for the company. And this is a very strong boundary in Germany. People take pride in their work. They tell, I work at Deutsche Solar. And this is something that I'm still seeking here in the United States, because I haven't found it yet. And my commitment still is, if I have the right people that are going along the way that we would like to have being successful, then we provide the security that employees wants to have. Because I know only with the right set of people, I can compete on the market. Silicon is available worldwide, glass too. The equipment can be bought at the equipment supplier, so the Chinese can do that too. I have no advantage over this. I can only have the smarter people that work better, that get more out of the equipment than the others, that take care that we have no losses and no yield losses, that we have the better efficiency. That's what I need, because that's what gives me success. Otherwise, I have to shut down and sit on the beach again. And therefore, I need the right set of people. But the right set means also they have to deliver, and we have to make sure that they can deliver. This is, we are sitting in the same boat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate those comments, and I hope you will find what I know to be true, that we have some of the best workers and best educated workers anywhere in the country here in Oregon, and people are very, very eager to have the kind of jobs that you're describing, jobs where they can feel proud of where they work and loyal to their employer. And I think the more that that's the culture of the company, the more the workers respond to that. So I think people are looking for those kinds of jobs here in our state, and I really
And for reference, you might look at Freiburg, and it's still like, because that's what we have done over the last 8 years. No, that's not talking, that's what we have done. That's what we did. This is what's standing there for. And that's basically all I can say. And it's, I guess, the best proof I can make.
Thank you.
Thank you. Others? Yes, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to echo the comments from my colleagues here about how excited we are, and both about the potential for sales that go elsewhere in the world. But I'm interested, too, have you given thought about what the potential is in Oregon, what your sales might be here in our state?
I can't provide you with the figures. I know that in Oregon there had been a lot of discussions also on how to change, so to say, towards renewable energies and markets, and I know that we have had a close look on it, but for the time being most of our attention still is how to get everything on the production side done. Mm. And therefore I don't know exactly what the market potential could be or will be, but of course this is our home market, and as in Germany or around Freiburg, you know, your town.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Others? Yeah, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am, I think Representative Poon said it best. We are really thrilled with this opportunity to partner up with a company that is going the same direction that we are in terms of sustainability, in terms of manufacturing a product for the future. Thrilled with your presentation, thrilled with your presence. Did I understand you to say that you will be the acting manager of this planet personally yourself? Is that, did I understand that?
Yes, for the time being, yes. On the long run, I might supervise it. I'm Chief Operating Officer of SolarWorld AG, and therefore the responsibility for all the production side is in my hands. So I'm also supervising the productions in Freiburg. I have built up a management team now here for Hillsborough, coming partially out of Hillsborough already, and we will have still a few time to go together until I believe they can manage it basically on their own, because I also believe management must be also locally. They must know the area and they must be dedicated here, so it can't only run out of Germany and with German management. But I will be of course there and supervise it, and still have my travel plans between Freiburg, Bonn, and then Portland. And by the way, Portland is also by far nicer than the area in California. New plans are old style, you know.
But not
downtown. I mean, bricks, I mean, houses, streets, public transportation.
This is all.
And Germans in special are very used to, yeah, pubs and going out. Yeah. You found not that much in California.
then let me just say welcome to you and your team. I hope you will look at our workforce here at all levels, because we think this is paradise, frankly, and we are welcoming you to it, even our friend here from California. And we really appreciate that this, I think, is going to be a very, very good partnership. And I hate to tell you this, but if you build as planned here, we know clustering, and you will bring your competitors here, too, and your suppliers, and this is the start. It won't be just you. It will be others. We understand that, and we are looking beyond just you to what...
And they're already there.
What you're incubating here.
If I may comment there, too. We have brought Cavalion. Carrion is a general contractor that helped us building these buildings here. and they have already established their U.S. entity in Hillsborough, and undergoing now the renovation and the rebuilding of the existing site. And they already have experience, okay, it's a perfect location because they're coming out of semiconductor and high tech and medicine areas and have built even complete plants for Intel. So they're already there, and we know that a lot of our suppliers, a lot of the equipment is unfortunately coming out of Europe because the machine building is, and as the markets are by far more mature than here, most of the equipment still comes out of Germany. And a lot of these, as to the contracts that we have with them, are seeking for places in the United States to provide service. And of course, ISCO in Oregon provides good opportunities for them too. So yes, we know there are suppliers coming. And that's what we have seen in Freiburg too, because as the business is growing so big and that we have so much services, I haven't spelled out, we are working here with the university. What you see over here is an R&D lab. There are two institutes that we have founded together with other universities and institutes in Germany on that specific spot. Freiburg is an own university where we have sponsored a chair and have direct close relationship with the university. That means we are spending millions in R&D in that area and into local employment of people and in training and education, because we need them. They are specialized people that have very good job reputation, and so you see that there is, it's not only sort of around it, there's growing a complete industry. And as I know that other companies have been pulled into Oregon too, like Solex, I know that there will be more business coming up because they are just waiting until it has a critical mass to get their people or their operations up here, because otherwise they spend more on traveling than on services.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Others? Yes, Representative Lentz.
Mr. Chair, if I may, and at the risk of disrupting the general positive tenor of things, why don't you share with us what you see as the greatest shortfall of coming to Oregon? Do you see any problems that we should be thinking about? Or are we perfect?
And again, being German, they are pretty direct and open. It's one of us is permissions. We are pretty used to have very quick permissions and getting along very quickly, and not having 1, 2, 3 years pre-planning before we can take any decision and build something. And we have worked out with Freiburg schemes there too, very quick. In 3 to 4 weeks, done, and then we can proceed. And we always fulfill, of course, other regulations. It's not that I'm not willing and not able to fulfill them, but time is critical. In these growing markets, we can't afford to spend time. Yes, Betsy's or investment or subsidies are a certain factor for us, because we had obviously attracted by I don't know how many areas on the world to be or to invest. And of course, as a company, as a representative of my shareholders, I have to look on our profits and make it able that we will be the survivor in the competition. And therefore, economic, macroeconomic areas and topics, yes, are of a certain importance. That's why we spend also time here, because for us, yes, it is important. It's also a decision making part of it. I'm not willing to think about if that would not be the case. So I'm ignoring that part for the time being.
And of course, we must realize that Mayor Hughes is sitting behind you and listening to all of this.
On the long-term success, I guess it's all about American regulations too on the electricity, how to get PV systems connected, how to get into the market. In Germany specific, but in Europe, the legislation has taken a very specific way with the feed-in tariff. And when Germany introduced the feed-in tariff, and the feed-in tariff is, you as a private person, you just go and buy your PV system. You don't have to ask anyone. I mean, are you asking someone to buy a TV set? No. You step into the Best Buy, Fry's, I don't know. You said, this is the one I would like to have. You pay, you take it home, you plug it in, you enjoy it. So why, in the United States, if you want to have a PV system, you have to fill out forms, run through several months of decision making until you get told you might be allowed to install a PV system? This is not fair. And this is definitely not what I expect from the country of the free and the brave. Of independence. The feed-in tariff provides safe investment for the end user, for the citizen. They can go, they get a fixed rate per kilowatt hour for 20 years. It's higher than the normal power. And the money for that gets split by all consumers. So every kilowatt hour that's spent in Germany has to pay a very, very little premium to pay for the efforts in Germany for renewable energies. And that's not only true for PV, that's also true for wind, biomass, and other renewable energies, because it's a common effort. And that's how in Germany they have provided the best system in the world today. Germany is taking account for more than half of the world market, and the market exploded and the people love the product. That's why we can sell it so good. And of course they have got good markets. And I guess within US we still have to work on the public awareness of photovoltaics and how to get a regulation set that it's easy for Americans to install a PV system, to have the choice to decide, hey, I'm going for a nuclear power plant, I'm going for the coal out of my plug, or I'm going to install a PV system on my roof. That decision and the battle on the market, we are fine to go. And I'm not there to say you have to take a PV system, but it must be able for them to express their freedom and then execute it. Because I don't see any reasons why utilities can regulate and say, hey, this is too complicated. You need a $10,000 pre-acceptance and only through my agency approval. Because, of course, no one will do it. And there must be a level playing field, a fair ground where we compete, where we can compete among the power. And then I'm more than convinced we will win the battle.
Thank you.
I'd like to comment on the points you've just been making, because I think they're very, very important. You have described your business as building down to the kit form, so that a contractor can buy a kit from you and install it. My suspicion is that if we push the issue you've just raised around permitting, with the business model that you've already described, our odds of actually getting to a simplified permitting process is much greater than it would be if you were simply providing components for someone else to build into systems. So I think your business model and your request for an improved permitting system go together.
And it happens because otherwise you can't get the cost down. Because every special other regulation somewhere is always driving cost. I mean, how would it be if cars in California have to be built differently than in Oregon? So you change the car at you're still allowed to drive the cars everywhere. No?
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah?
That's true.
So it's not that you have to stop and change.
Representative Brown. Yeah, thank you, Mr. One quick one that was spurred by one of Representative Bent's questions. When you were starting this process, a simple question, did you find Oregon or did Oregon find you? You mentioned there were a lot of localities competing for this investment. How did you come about Oregon? I mean, I know there was some experience in the Northwest. And
we did.
You did, okay. So there was no economic development effort on our behalf that went out and found you first.
I mean, we did first because, as Bob already pointed out, we have a factory running in Vancouver, Washington State, so that's not too far away. So some of our people knew about
the Komatsu plant being there out for a long time. And when we went through, even recall how many places we have on the first survey, so we had, you know, plenty of them, and then you go through certain categories and you narrow it down, and yes, then Hillsborough was among them, and the closer we looked at, the more we found it would be suitable.
Thank you. Others? May I would simply like to add my comments to those that have already been made by the committee. I'm very impressed with your presentation today. I'm very impressed with your business model as you've described it to us. I think many of us are extremely interested in the kind of businesses that you're describing, ones that plan to be around for a long time, that plan to treat employees as a family, to be involved in the community in important ways, beyond simply the business that you're in. And I have to say for myself, it is very clear to me that it is necessary in the world for us to move from a fossil fuel system of industry to a system based on sustainable production of energy. There's no question at all about that. It has to be done. And we have to figure out how to do it, bootstrapping from the existing industries we have into a new world with industries based on renewable energy. Your company appears to me, at least, to be one of those companies which will provide part of the bridge to get us there. And for that, I think we're very pleased. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the presentation today, and I suspect that you will be hearing from some of us again in other contexts as we work on the bills that we're working on. And we are working very closely with Jack to try to craft those in ways that deal with the issues you discussed with Representative Dance.
Chairman Bernard, members of the committee, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to provide. And whenever you want, wherever you want, we will be there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. It's true. I don't like it.
Yeah. Paul, do you have someone? Come forward, please. Yes, thank you. Have a seat, identify yourself for the record, and give us your testimony. Thank you.
I thank you to Joe Esmond with the IBEW Local 48 in Portland, Oregon, 15937 Northeast Airport Road, City of Portland, 97230. I am a business agent, and for the union, we represent 4,000 people in the Portland area. Statewide, about 10,000 is inside and outside. I mean, I just want to let you know, first of all, I've worked in both of his plants. The one in Vancouver was filthy. I helped build Komatsu, and I hope it's still running. It's been a while since I've been out of the field. Right now, we have trained in the state of Oregon between 600 and 700 electricians on solar. They've taken 8 to 16 hour classes. We have contractors. We're putting one on our building in Portland, along with a windmill. We're getting from the Energy Trust of Oregon. We can't keep up enough of the solar classes. So I want to let you know that we have those people all trained to go. I took one of the solar consultants here in the state. I took them down to the city of Portland to work with their inspectors to know what they're looking at. So besides the solar, we do the wind turbines, and waves are next. And I just got a seat down at the city of Portland on looking at how to retrofit existing buildings, because the watts you don't use, you save. So I just want to put, I want to point that out, damn it, excuse me. So I got a little handout here from one of our contractors. We work kind of hand in hand with them, and if you don't mind, I'll give it to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That would be very helpful.
Thank you. Any questions?
Questions, comments? Thank you. We appreciate
okay. Thank you for your time.
Appreciate your testimony. Nazan will take your handout for you and see that the committee gets it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Part of that infrastructure. Representative Krieger, do you want to join us at the podium? Or do you have testimony to provide today?
How long are you going to be in on this bill, Mr. Chair?
Probably 20 minutes. We're finished with this bill. We're moving on now to the estate tax issue.
I can just sit here and listen and take some notes.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very good. And who's the phone?
Jeff Sheen.
Mr. Sheen. Is he here? He is. Mr. Sheen, committee, we're shifting gears now to the second piece of the information meeting today, which essentially has to do with the estate tax issue that we're going to be talking about in more detail on our bills tonight.
Mr. Chair, just to brief the committee on kind of the process, we do, of course, have a public hearing tonight on House Bill 3618 is the estate tax issue that you've discussed prior to the session a number of times. And we're currently working on a bill for that, the purposes of that. We have a work group scheduled to meet tomorrow afternoon. And we'll be working on some final amendments for the bill. As you recall, Jeff Sheen has been working with us, representing an ad hoc group from the Oregon Bar and CPAs. So we've asked Jeff to continue to kind of update you on any issues that, from the standpoint of practitioners, they may see as particularly troublesome. So the idea being that you'll produce a bill that the practitioners will be able to know what your direction is, and it'll be workable for the Department of Revenue. So we've asked Jeff to come back and talk with you about kind of where we are.
Thank you. Please.
Representative Barnhart and members of the Revenue Committee, my name is Jeff Sheen. I'm an attorney with the firm of Samuel Joel and Cantor in Portland, Oregon. Good morning. I appreciate this opportunity to be here and discuss these issues, and I also, but Heather Gilmore is joining me. She also sits or works on the work group, has been involved in this material, and if there's an evening meeting this evening, she will be available for that meeting. I thought I'd spend a few minutes today kind of just sort of trying to give some of the kind of areas where we think we need to see some clarification. Obviously, there's some policy issues that I'm not going to address today. And let me sort of start with, there's a lot of references in the memo that I handed out to Internal Revenue Code Section 2032A. And the reason, and some I think are viewing this as an added complexity to this credit legislation that we may or may not need. Part of the dilemma is that when the original House Bill 3201 was passed, there was a reference in that statute to tying it to Internal Revenue Code Section 2032A, and a number of us were kind of scratching our head, well, what parts did you intend this bill to tie to? And that's what we got sort of started with, because what 2032A is a fairly complex Internal Revenue Code.
Let me interrupt just for one second. Colleagues, we do have copies of the And it's headed Cornell University Law School, and it has copies of those statutes. There are three different stapled items, and one of them is section 2032A. Please, go ahead.
Okay.
Was it passed out? So it should be in the pile that you have this morning.
Oh, got it.
There's three pieces because there's three references in the bill itself.
Got it. Thank
2032A
you.
Is one of
you
those.
You can see that Paul went on the internet and grabbed it from the University Law School library.
This is not an advertisement for Cornell. This is the link that was from the IRS.
Thank you. So.
Right.
That
okay.
helps.
So, what 2032A and the Internal Revenue Code side represents is a way for an estate to reduce its reportable value when it holds assets that are being used for a value or for a purpose that's lower than its highest and best use. For example, here in Oregon, there's lots of farmland in the Willamette Valley in particular that is worth far more than what a farm operator would pay for it as a farm because of other use capabilities such as development for residential. And in the past, at least the legislation I participated in, is there's been a strong emphasis in the Oregon tax statutes, both on the income tax side and on the inheritance tax side, to tie the Oregon legislation to the Internal Revenue Code. And for better or worse, you get a whole bunch of regulations and a whole bunch of case law and a whole bunch of rulings and stuff to help interpret what this means. And so that's kind of been the input of the work group, is just to say there's places here where we think those references might be helpful in interpreting this bill. So with that, we kind of have basically seven concerns I wanted to talk about today. Property inclusion concerns, we think that the intent of this legislation is to cover all property, whether it's real or personal, whether it's tangible or intangible, if it's in the natural resource category or if it's commercial fishing operations. The intent of the legislature is that's eligible for the credit. So I put some language in. I'm not married to this language, but to sort of express the intent to expand, to make clear that all of this property is included. Now, Clinton Benz, the CPA, has prepared a memo which she is going to present to you this evening, addressing an issue which I think we share as concern, that there is a lot of forest land owners that have forests and trees but don't necessarily engage in a trade or business. And I think, you know, that's an issue that we can tweak and get straightened out, because I think the intent is that trees are covered regardless of whether or not there's a trade or business. The material participation concerns is probably the area where we get into the most complexity in connecting with 2032A, the Internal Revenue Code. And the concern there was that if you have property owned by an entity, such as a limited liability company or a corporation, that there needs to be some active participation by a family member in that entity in order for it to qualify for the credit. And so we've put some suggested changes in there. Now, Mr. Benz is going to probably present that this may be a complexity that we don't need to get into, but I think the idea here is that you want the entities to be owned by family members who continue to be involved in the operation of the natural resource or commercial fishing operation. The current bill, House Bill 3618, does tie its definition of a member of the family to 2032A subparagraph E2, which defines a member of the family, and I think that's an adequate definition It's a little more expansive than what the original legislation put in place, but it does address issues of heirs who are minors, heirs who are disabled, and some of those kinds of issues, which I think are important to cover. However, yesterday a sub-issue emerged from that is, since you are adopting this bill after the domestic partnership legislation came into effect, and I'm not an expert on how this stuff ties together, but you may want to include a provision that specifically includes domestic partners as members of the family in this bill, because here you're going out with this law to reach a specific Internal Revenue Code definition that does not include domestic partners, and I think it's probably the intent of this bill that it does.
This is item two.
This is
next page.
So it's on page two, number four.
Oh, sorry, I'm behind. Thank you.
The item five is an interest in a closely held business. There's a tie-in to Internal Revenue Code 6166B1, which is currently in the bill. We're suggesting perhaps rather than specifically tying to that section, to maybe back off and link it to 2032A per NG, and I propose certainly some drafting options there. And I think Mr. Benz has probably got some comments on that this evening, but I think those are some tweaks that we can take up at tomorrow afternoon. Yesterday an issue was raised, and I think what about a partial disposition? For example, if you have a forest land with trees, say worth $7.5 million, that's eligible for a credit, and 3 years from now, the person passes away, and 3 years later, $1 million of trees is harvested off of that property. The way the bill is currently written, it appears that would trigger a complete recapture. And I don't think it's the intent of this group to cause that. I think the recapture should be proportional in relationship. So if you have $1 million sale of trees, there would be a partial recapture of the million over 7.5, in other words, roughly 1/7 of the tax that was saved in the credit would come back would be due. And so, in other words, partial, or if you have one heir who decides to sell out their interest, that wouldn't cause the complete recapture of the credit. So I've put some language in there, and again, I'm not, no pride of authorship, but just to suggest that if there is a partial distribution or disposition of property, that the credit not be fully due, but it can be prorated based on the amount of the partial disposition. The last item is, at least on the memos, number six, is commercial fishing operations. And there, again, there's no definition in this legislation as to what that is. And I think that's a little bit beyond the expertise of our group. At least I don't think we have anybody in the group that's in the commercial fishing industry. So we're sort of positing that perhaps the decedent or a member of the family should have a commercial fishing license as sort of a basic starting point. So those are the issues that we have concerns in terms of the drafting language. Mr. Benz also raises an issue of some of the credit computations. I'm not prepared to go into that, but they do appear to be worth some consideration, and I've given a copy of Mr. Benz's letter to Deborah Buchanan, who can probably address some of the issues that he's raised as well. So at this juncture, I think I'm very open for questions.
Thank you. Questions at this time? Well, needless to say, we're going to be spending a substantially more time on this issue, but I wanted to get these in to the committee before we get involved in our more detailed conversations, because this issue came up originally because your group's concern about the bill, about the existing law. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Is there anything else for us now?
We
will be meeting tonight at 7 o'clock. We have a public hearing on several bills as a voting in. We will meet in Hearing Room A, our usual meeting place, rather than during the regular session, rather than here, because this room is otherwise engaged tonight. And I think I'll be until 7, is that right? Thank you. All right. The committee will stand in recess until 7 p.m.
Thank you.
We need to wait.